Welcome to Live, Leadership, Innovation, Ventures, and Entrepreneurship, a podcast that showcases the talents, skills, and abilities of UT faculty, staff, and students. I'm your host, Brandon Jones, Associate Director for Student Learning and Development in Housing and Dining, and we're excited to have you listening to us. All right. Welcome, everybody, to Live, Leadership, Innovation, Ventures, and Entrepreneurship podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Jones, Associate Director for Student Learning and Development in University Housing and Dining at the University of Texas at Austin. And today, we have a very, very, very special guest with us today. Her name is Suseth Munoz. She's an English Government Youth and Community Studies major. And we're so excited to have her here with us because let me tell you a little bit about Suseth. Suseth is a rock star on campus. She's a student member of the First Gen Longhorns. She's the diversity coordinator of the Senate of College Councils, Equity and Inclusion Policy Director for Student Government. She's a community advocate. She's on the JOLT Action Committee. And she's also an RA in Jester West. Shout out to all the RAs out there. What's up? What's up? So without further ado, I want to welcome you, Suseth, to the show. How are you doing today, Suseth?
Hi, Dr. Jones. I'm doing good today. Thank you for that introduction.
Wonderful. Nah, those are your accolades. They out there for the world to see, like no lie. We'll probably put that in the show notes so that people can see I'm not making this up and trying to just gas you up or anything like that. Like this is real. Suseth is active and busy and is out there. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted Suseth on the show today. So I want to read a quick statement that's on the Diversity and Community Engagement website that gives a brief description about some of the things Suseth has been up to lately. So this past July, Interim President Jay Hartzell released a statement detailing a plan to make the campus more diverse and inclusive in response to lists of demands made by the Texas Student Athlete Advisory Committee and a coalition of students, faculty, staff, and alumni, including members of the precursors who drafted the 8 demands for transformative change. Suseth Munoz is one of several student members of the Senate of College Councils who helped draft the list of demands, which called for a number of actions to make the campus more supportive of Black and Indigenous students of color. And although some demands were unmet, Suseth believes the university is moving in the right direction and that in time, more change will come. And I want to give Suseth the chance to kind of talk about her experience doing that. But before we do, Suseth, can you kind of tell people a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your major, what year you are, because I forgot to put that in the introduction, but also where you're from?
Yeah, so I'm currently a junior. So all those three majors that were listed, English, Government, and Youth and Community Studies, they're like political science and education, and they're all like my passion projects throughout the year. I have added them as I have been been here at UT, and a lot of them like kind of spread out after I became an OA, so an orientation advisor. And I'm originally from the Rio Grande Valley. The Rio Grande Valley is like south of the border. It's the real border. It's very down south, farther than San Antonio, for people that don't know. And yeah, I immigrated here when I was like 6 years old. So I am originally from Mexico, but the Rio Grande Valley became my home as I grew up. And I hold it very close to home.
Well, wow. Well, thank you for sharing that with us today. So you're also an RA. Why don't you, since we're in the back to school season and students just moved back into the halls, tell us a little bit about what it's been like to serve as an RA. How long have you been an RA and what attracted you to that role?
Yeah, I became an RA my sophomore year. So usually they intake people after their freshman year. I was lucky enough to get that first offer. But yeah, I became an RA just because like, originally, like I'm a low income student and like the RA job like has a lot of perks when it comes to those type of things. And I know like people say like, oh, I want to make a change and like be a change for these students. But like the truth of the matter was when I applied, I was really worried about like, what am I going to do next year? Like, am I going to be able to come back to UT. So I applied. So when I got the like the job, I like cried because it was like a huge relief. Wow. Obviously now I do it for a very different reason. I actually like really love the job and I really love the role. My residence, my first year, kind of like changed my outlook on a lot of things. And like, yeah, I messaged them yesterday, like 2 days ago, saying like, oh, I'm archiving this group me, y'all, like just like a goodbye. And they were like, no, don't do it. We'll miss you, blah, blah, blah. Like, we miss Jay too. We had a good life. So yeah, I do it for very different reasons now, but that's the truth. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that with us. So let's talk a little bit about some of the work that you did this past summer as one of the one of the student members of the Senate of College Councils that helped craft that list of demands for President Hartzell. Why don't you kind of tell us like how you got involved with the Senate of College Councils, but then also what led to your involvement with crafting the list of demands for the president?
Yeah, so I joined the Senate of College Councils my sophomore year. I joined because of my friend who was also an orientation advisor. He was like, you should really join. Like, you're going to love this org. It's right for you. And hold and behold, it was for me. And I stayed there. But, like, recognizing that those spaces, like, legislative student organizations are very elitist places and places that people just join to put onto their resumes, right? It's also something that I have had to navigate and be like, listen, we're here to make like real change and like we're here to actually represent like the marginalized and like underrepresented communities on campus.
Sure.
And that's like why I became a diversity coordinator, which is like the role of kind of changing the status quo and like the environment inside of Senate.
Sure.
So as I step into that role, everything kind of changed in March, right? Once the death of like, so I'll start like first, as an equity and inclusion policy director in student government, we released a statement, right? We released a statement of like, just, you know, condemning the acts of the police and like showing up for that community and showing solidarity. And that was that, like it was a statement. It was like some asks to the community and it had a lot of like positive feedback from a lot of like student organizations on campus. Like they started releasing their own statements and saying like, we're gonna do this, like we're gonna donate to these organizations and like these nonprofits. So like that's kind of what started the ball rolling at UT. But then the Senate of College Council, so that's my other role. We saw like the number, we started compiling all the numbers of student organizations that started like condemning this act, like acts. And then like you started seeing people actually like making demands and like making asks. And that's kind of when the Senate of College Councils and like a lot of like the President Advisory Committee, which is people that meet with the president monthly or weekly and actually like tell him what's going on campus. We all decided to just like compile all these asks and all these demands that have been going on for years. Like the People for PMA movement has been going on for years. So that was one of the things that we added onto our 8 demands.
Can you tell the audience what the People for PMA is?
Yeah, so the People for PMA were the people that were condemning the name, the previous name of Robert Lee Moore of that building. It's an underground like student movement, which is like, it's really like cool once you learn about it because they, we had a conversation with them and they kind of said that they went through the archives and like they looked for like past lectures and like things that made like that just kind of pointed out how racist this person and professor was. And like they said, enough is enough. Like the university is not going to change the name. We're going to change the name ourselves. So that's kind of why. And like professors themselves like changed the in their syllabus, like put PMA instead of Robert Lee Moore in their syllabus sometimes, right? So like this had been going on for years. So the Center of College Counselors kind of just like stepped up and compile all of these asks, but we also recognizing that a lot of these movements have already been happening, and like these asks have been happening for years and like months. So not co-opting that work was really something that we kind of tried to emphasize, and that's why we reached out to a lot of like Black organizations on campus and Black leaders. Mm-hmm. For them to review and like add whatever they wanted and like take out whatever they wanted and like whatever they didn't agree with. So that's kind of how the aid demands like came out, from a lot of like people poking, like just looking at the Google Doc and being like, oh, we should add this, oh, we should take out this, we should add this and this and this. And then like it went into that aid demands that we see today, which is like a very comprehensive list that tackles not just student life, but also academic life, and like really big changes that holistically make a really big change on campus.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think that for the folks that are listening that aren't familiar with what's going on, you know, I explained earlier that these students, this was all student-led. It was a student-led effort to present this list of 8 demands for transformative change to the president. And then there was the list of demands made by the Texas Student Athlete Advisory Committee and other groups. And for the most part, the president, I mean, and the statement is out there if people want to see it. But for the most part, I mean, I was so proud of the students. You know, for me, sitting back watching it as a professor and a staff member here at the university, I was very pleased to see that our students being so active and being engaged in this work. And earlier you were talking about the violent acts committed against, you know, George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, who's murderers who still have not been captured or brought to justice. And then now more recently with Jacob Blake and a host of others, the students were speaking out and are still speaking out. So one challenge that, you know, I know a lot of students who I've had a chance to meet with over the course of the last 6 months, a lot of the challenges that are presented is that many students don't know how to speak up, and they don't know how to advocate or be an ally, Suseth. So can you talk to the students that are out there right now that may be listening to this, who may be home taking their classes remotely, or maybe here on campus trying to figure out how in the world can they make their voice count in this space and in this time?
Yeah, I think that's a really real question. Like, because it can be like really intimidating to like, you know, say something because you might not know enough, or you might not be eloquent enough, like have the right language. Mm-hmm. Or like even be in those spaces where when you're allowed to speak out and like you're allowed to question the status quo. And I think I do have to acknowledge the privilege that I have, like being in the Senate College Councils, which is like very receptive to like my voice. My very radical voice. And I have not been shut down from those spaces, but a lot of people do like experience that. And you do experience that in a predominantly white university like UT, right? So what I encourage people to do is just like listen to organizers and listen to these students that are speaking out, and listen to the Black voices. Like, you do not want to be censoring like somebody that does not experience this like on a daily basis, right? Mm-hmm. So listen to those voices, and then there's also the saying like, oh, just don't like listen and learn, and that's okay too. But I think that you should be listening with the intent to act, not just like intake everything and intake like their frustrations and intake like their rage and hurt, because that's just like you. I think that that's a place that you can be like, oh, well, there's nothing else that I can do, or like be a little comfort is about it, right? So I think like listening with the intent of like speaking out and like acting out, and like, and you can act out and listen in like any space, like right now in your classes, if you see something that like is weird or like doesn't just like feel okay, speak out against it. Like, I know a lot of these professors, like, yeah, they have been experiencing this during the summer as well, but their syllabus might be predominantly white. And like, you can point out those things like, oh, do you have like any ethnic or like LGBTQI authors or Black authors on your syllabus? Like, I think that the way that you make inclusive spaces is by questioning the status quo and questioning like why things have been for like that for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And that's something that obviously like it takes a little bit of courage, but if you don't do it, then who else is going to do it? And yeah, and I think like you should take in all of those lessons and all these things that have been happening for months and acting. Because you had enough time to listen. Like at this point, enough time to listen. It's time to act in your classrooms. It's time to act in those spaces and question people's like actions and question why things are why, how they are.
Yeah, you said a couple of things there, and I want to, you know, typically, just so you know, my format is as somebody who subscribes to phenomenology, which is the study of the lived experience, I always try, as a practice, I try to let the title of this show emerge during the conversation. And so as you were talking, when you said listening with the intent to act, I love that statement. And that's probably going to be the title of the episode because it has a very social justice advocacy and allyship tone to it. It's like the intent to act. It's like, I'm not just listening to be listening. Like, I'm not just sitting here in this space to just go to this class and do nothing. And so I really appreciated the fact that you said that and then gave some details on how to go about doing it. But also, you said something that about questioning the status quo. And my friend, Darren Roberts, who's a professor on campus, who also was one of the first Black students, I think he was the second Black student government president here at UT a number of years ago, also from East Texas. So shout out to all my East Texas people. But he says something in his podcasts and in his conversations with students is that we got to declare war on the status quo. Why do you feel like it's so important to push back and question in this space? Because again, you're a college student. You know, you said you migrated here as a young child. You're part of the first gen Longhorns. And so you're navigating this space with multiple aspects of identity and culture. And you're a student. On top of everything you're doing, you are a college student. How do you not only make time for all that, but also push back in a way that means something to you? Because, you know, that's a lot. That is a lot. How do you do all of that?
Yeah, it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. It's very exhausting because I think, like, I mean, we have been normalized to not question things and just, like, go on and, like, go to class, do a routine. But isn't that part of like the status quo, right? I actually have a friend who wrote about like how brushing your teeth is kind of like a capitalist propaganda, which is like it's questionable, right? But if you think about it, what they said was like, because if you're so used to all these routines, it's like allows you to not question why things are how they are. Mm-hmm. And even though I was like, that was so funny to me, it's very true, because I think you can get lost in everything that's going on. And I think that's what can happen. And that's, I mean, if you listen to other people, like to other Black individuals, they can say like, yeah, like every time a Black person dies, like they can become a little bit numb to it. And that's very valid. That's extremely valid because that's their everyday lived experience. But why, as a Mexican, like, woman, like, why, like, I can't, if they're going to be numb about it, like, that's okay because that's their identity and, like, they have to live through that. Yeah. But I don't, and I have the privilege of, like, doing all these things and, like, acting and, like, questioning things because of my own privileges, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I probably won't be shut down in a conversation.
Sure.
And I think, like, just questioning the status quo and like fighting against it is very important, even if you are shut down and it becomes a little exhausting. But I think it's important for people to start knowing that things are not going to go back to normal. Nobody wants things to go back to normal. Like, you are being exposed to the inequities and social injustices in the world. Mm-hmm. And that was not okay. And that was not normal. And just because you didn't have, like, you weren't aware of these things, like, you think you can go back to not being aware? Like, no, that's not how it works.
Right. Yeah, there's, you know, Dr. Tyus, who oversees all of housing and dining, always tells us we can't go back. She says it all the time. She's like, we when we come out of this, there is no going back to the way things were. We're going to come out of this differently. And so the question, you said something else a second ago that just sparked a lot of questions. I just keep writing questions down as you're talking. What are some of the experiences that you feel like you took advantage of as a freshman that, or at any point in your educational journey, what are some of the experiences that you feel like you took advantage of that helped you develop your advocacy and ally voice, or your advocate and ally voice? Yeah, let's start there.
Yeah, so as a freshman, I obviously, like, I had to battle a lot of, like, different things, like imposter syndrome. Like, my first language is not English, so, like, I had to be, like, get used to speaking English all the time, and, like, being in the spaces where I, like, had to lower my hand because I didn't think I was smart enough. And, like, at one point I wanted to move back home because I think, like, I thought I wasn't smart enough. And I think that's something that a lot of, like, students face here at UT.
Sure. Hold on. Before you dive deeper, talk more about that, because I think that's important. We just started the semester 2 days ago, and students are coming from everywhere. Some students are remote. Some students are on campus. Some students are living off campus. But people are taking classes at this university. Somebody is struggling with that exact same thing. I want you to go back and dig into that imposter syndrome piece. Talk about where you feel like that came from, and what that, and how you overcame that. I don't want to miss that. We'll get back to the question I asked you earlier, but I don't want to miss that, because I think that's an important detail.
Yeah. Well, I think I felt imposter syndrome, which, for folks that don't know, imposter syndrome is basically thinking that you don't deserve the chances that you're getting. Mm-hmm. So I think I felt that way because, like I said, I come from a low income background. Like, I did not have the same resources that a lot of these people had. Mm-hmm. Whenever, like, somebody spoke in class, like, they had a lot of, like, eloquent and, like, high pretentious language. Mm-hmm. And just to ask a question, I was like, oh, like, that was so smart. Like, oh my gosh, I will never be to that level. And also, I'm a first gen student. Like, I had to figure out, like, what post-secondary education looks like, and, like, how to ask for a major, how to, like, approach a professor, how to, like, do all these things. And it was really difficult. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, like, I didn't have any friends coming here to UT with me. So, I had to, like, start afresh and start new. So all of these, like, little things, like, build up, and, like, one day I got, like, not a grade that I was expecting, and I cried, and, like, I called my dad, and I thought that they would be disappointed in me, but, that phone call really, like, changed my perspective. Like, he said, you're there to learn, and, like, you're there to learn from your mistakes, and when you fall, you have to pick yourself back up. And I think, like, I needed to hear that, because it made it seem like I was there for me, not just to be the representation of my family. So all the things that I'm doing are for myself, as much as I do want to make my family proud.
Wow.
And that was, like, a really hard realization, because I think all first gen students, or most of them, like, have this heavy burden of being like, I have to be the very best for my family. Right. But that's not true. Like, you're there for yourself too, and you're there to change your mind, and you're there to fall. and that's okay.
No, Sue Seth, you're dropping some major, you're dropping some major gems this morning. You know, when we talk about that imposter syndrome, you I love the way you defined it as you felt like you didn't deserve the chances that you're getting. And isn't it strange that at a school like UT, where you know you got the top 6% admission, which means you're admitting some great students, some very smart individuals, all of you, every last student who's admitted to this university are all intelligent. And yet a lot of students come here and feel like, whoa, I don't belong. And it's like, you were in the top percent of your class. Like, what do you mean you don't belong? Like, UT wouldn't have admitted you if you didn't. Yet, when you think about the other variables, right? The other things that we experience, you know, you said you had to, you know, English is not your first language. You're the first person in your family to go to college, come from a low socioeconomic background. On top of all of that, you got a whole host of other identities at work and culture at play there. And you're trying to navigate a place with 53,000 students in Austin, Texas, in this large, gigantic city. That's a lot. And so I always try to remind students of the different things that you all have worked to overcome to not only be at UT, but to thrive at UT. And I just really want to applaud you and other students who are out there listening to this right now who have had to overcome similar odds, may not be the same, but definitely similar odds. And then yet, when I look at everything that you're involved in, when I look at the student you are today, and when I look at everything you're doing, like, you're a success story, Suzette. So, you know, kudos to you. Like, you're out here doing your thing. So I'm proud of you. And I'm happy that I've got to witness it in more ways than one, especially with you being an RA and participating in other experiences. Are there other, let's go back to that question I asked you earlier. Are there other experiences or opportunities that you took advantage of at the university that you felt like, wow, this really helped me understand these things differently? Or was there a class like Dr. Moore's class or something like that, that, you know, that you would recommend students or workshops that students could participate in here at UT to help them develop their voice and get more comfortable speaking out?
Yeah, I think my fall semester or spring semester, I joined, which is I'm plugging in Longhorns for Culturally Competent Campus.
Yeah.
I joined that my freshman year. I don't remember what semester, but it was a really good experience because you get to learn about how to speak about, like, how to navigate different modes of communication and, like, how to be a good advocate and, like, learn about power and privilege. And, like, you get a lot of the vocabulary that you need as you grow, like, your allyship and, like, your advocacy skills. So that was a really good experience. But I think, like, the turning point for me was after my freshman year when I became an orientation advisor.
Wow.
I didn't want to do, like, I wasn't going to do it. And then I was like, no, like, because I felt like I was going to miss back home. And then I was like, no, I'm going to do it. And I did it. And it was the best experience because I just got to meet a lot of, like, different people that were in their own little bubbles and, like, doing amazing things. Mm-hmm. And I also, like, I met with, like, I